Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Ginsburg. Hope everybody's doing okay today. We have a guest that we're waiting for, Dr. Bob Davis. So we had him on the show, it's probably a year or two ago, or maybe even more. Bob's a professor. He's got a new documentary out called The Consciousness Connection. And we'll just talk a little bit, and hopefully Bob will make it. He may be having difficulties logging onto the show. He's written some pretty interesting books, The UFO Phenomenon, with a subtitle, Should I Believe? Life After Death, An Analysis of the Evidence, Unseen Forces, The Integration of Science, Reality, and You, and The Consciousness Connection, Extraordinary Human Experiences and the Nature of Reality. That book was turned into the documentary that I referenced, The Consciousness Connection, that can be seen on the Gaia Network, Gaia, GAIA.com. And Dr. Davis's website is BobDavisSpeaks.com, where you can find a link, you know, to that documentary. I was looking forward to talking with him. I haven't really, in our previous conversations, talked to him about the UFO phenomena. I know that Bob has had a lot of personal experiences on his own. And, you know, what I want to ask him is, there seems to be some similarities between the UFO phenomenon and life after death. And you might ask, well, how is that related? But there seems to be a spiritual connection between the two. So if Bob makes it to the show in the next couple of minutes, we can dive right in. If not, we may be forced to run a previously recorded show. So let's see what happens over the next 5 or 10 minutes. The number here, in case you want to call in, is 888-627-6008. I'd be curious to know how our audience feels about all of the recent wave of UFO sightings. It seems to be more and more prevalent today than it was in the past. Of course, everybody now has recording devices in their pocket. Maybe it has some, the technology has something to do with being able to capture many of these things. And as well, look, in the nature of the material that we discuss all the time on every show, is often difficult to capture or replicate in a laboratory setting because it's spontaneous. And so with these, you know, UFO sightings, I mean, a lot of people talk about abductions. I don't know if I would use that word of abduction. Maybe it's, you know, interactions, although some do claim that they've been abducted, but we don't know the motivation of any of these of beings. I don't know. I don't know about you, but I've come across quite a number of people in my circle of friends and acquaintances that have told me that they, you know, they had interactions with a unidentified aerial object, you know, that couldn't be explained by drones or flares or weather balloons and so forth. So who knows? I guess the question would be, if there is life on other planets, and the evidence seems to suggest that there is, do they take an interest in our little planet? Do they want to help? Do they want to harm? I see similarities because people often wonder if those loved ones of ours that are in the next world in another dimension, the same thing could be asked. Do they take an interest in our lives? And what is in their power and ability to help us? So, who knows what this conversation will be like 20 years from now? I think there's going to be a lot of advances, especially on the UFO front. And what's also I find encouraging is that people would never talk about encounters with alien life the same way that they never talked about after death communications, because it's been our societal influences and cultural influences in the media have taught us to fear such things, and people feel if they talk about it, they're open themselves up to being judged or labeled. So, I do find similarities between the two. I'm just checking on our guest right now to see. I hope he's okay because I don't see him online. So we'll give it another couple of minutes and see if not we'll have to reschedule him for another time. I don't know if anybody has seen, if not, you can look it up, heard of the Phoenix Lights. Right now, I don't know, it's quite a number of years since it occurred, but thousands upon thousands of people witnessed these craft flying in formation throughout the sky. And it's not like sometimes you think that they don't want to be spotted, and they dart here and about, but this was a full-out exhibition. And people filmed it. People stood and it lasted for quite a long time. So and it certainly can't be explained by at least physical objects that we're aware of. And the Air Force experts ruled out that they were craft, at least craft that we're aware of. The technology was far behind ahead of our capabilities. So things like that, all the reports I've been reading is that they're more brazen and more open. It's like they want us to know, that they're visiting, which is different than it seems that, we're different than it was in past years. I mean, while we're waiting, let's take a caller. We have Deb from Houston. Hi, Deb.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah,
Good.
this is something I've researched. I have a long career with NASA, and although I never came across anything officially in my NASA career, I have researched this pretty extensively in the last couple of years. And I think there's a there. The again with the and this is something you may have mentioned when I was on hold. I didn't hear the with the congressional hearings and the releases. I think the government is starting to actually be forced to acknowledge that there are these unexplained things. And as you have pointed out many times, I think just with mediumship and the afterlife is that the next thing we've got to do is we've got to get our scientists to be curious about it instead of saying it's not possible, therefore I'm not going to study it, right?
Right.
So there are I think there are some really good resources. There's an investigative reporter from Australia by the name of Ross Coulthart. Coulthart. He's a News Nation correspondent who started out as a skeptic and set out to disprove this craziness and has actually become quite convinced that this is real. And so folks can either see his show Reality Check on News Nation on their TV or look it up on YouTube. There, as you know, tons and tons of books that have been published on this. If they have a military bent, like the Lou Elizondos of the world, who of course helped to break the story with the New York Times story back in 2017 with Leslie Keene, that I think the military folks are a little more afraid and are worried. I come at it more from a consciousness level, and am not personally afraid of it. But again, it's always good and interesting to read different people's accounts. A book I just finished reading was The Day After Roswell, that was published in, I believe, 1996. The author was an army colonel who was a decorated veteran from World War II, and he was assigned to the Foreign Technology Desk back in the either the late 50s or early 60s. And that foreign technology was what he says was artifacts that they picked up from the Roswell crash. And so the book is about how he fed that technology into that DoD programs, things like fiber optics and Kevlar vests and semiconductors, things like that. So yeah, it's a very interesting I think it's a very interesting topic. If you look kind of more deeply in the sort of paranormal philosophical consciousness level, there's even more to experience, but I'll be quiet now and just tell you this is definitely a topic that of interest for me.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know, what you're able to talk about, but what was the prevailing feeling, inside of NASA about UFOs and or extraterrestrial, contact? I mean, was it discussed at all? I mean, the people, I mean, it wasn't discussed, obviously discussed publicly, but have you come across your colleagues that you'd engage in certain conversations about it?
Yeah, I was fairly senior and did some a fair amount of work with folks in Washington, D.C., prepared congressional testimony and so forth, and never came across anything like that. It's a closely held secret, if so. And we really didn't talk about it. Just again, I was involved in programs getting us off the planet, and we just never really talked about it. And frankly, the technology that we struggle with right now, just trying to go back to the moon, right? We just SpaceX just had another test flight, and things did not go as well as they were hoping. Those technologies are completely obsolete. If it's true, right, that the we have these other technologies. So yeah, unfortunately, nope, never ran across it. So definitely not as nothing official. I did meet Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, and they never said anything about it. I met several other Apollo astronauts, of course. Oh, I've lost his name now. The guy who set up IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences. But yeah, he was like Apollo 12,
Oh
thereabouts.
I know who you're talking about.
He had a spiritual experience. If you read books about him, things that he said as he, when he got close to dying as well. He exposed more of what he said he saw. But no personal experience with anyone who said they, they saw any grays themselves.
Yeah. Well, I know that you're well versed in the spiritual phenomena, and the non-physical experiences like near death and so forth. And a lot of people believe that there are similarities between that and these alien and craft encounters that people have. Going out of body, having after experiencing either one, having a deeper spiritual connection, knowing that we're not alone, we are connected. So I was never all that interested, in the UFO stuff, just concentrating on the stuff that we do. But now I think that there may be a link, between the two. And it also raises the question of whether or not, assuming that there are other entities out there, alien in nature, whether or not they're taking interest in our little tiny planet, the same way that we want to know if our loved ones that are in the next dimension take an interest in what's going on here, and if they have the power, so to speak, of helping. So, that there are similarities, but yeah,
Right. I mean, it's one of the late. I'm sorry.
yeah, I know you mentioned, Leslie Kane, and I've had extensive conversations with her, and some of the things that she has told me about her investigations are just incredible. It's one thing to get, an eyewitness report from somebody that didn't have any, credentials and so forth, but there are so many extremely gifted and talented, fighter pilots and people in high places that make extremely credible, witnesses, and it's hard to discount what they're saying. And also, what we were saying at the top of the show, it seems to me that alien crafts are becoming more, not only more prevalent, but out in the open. They're not hiding, and they're not darting away. We were talking about the Phoenix Lights, and they just put on a show, watch me, and thousands of people did. So I don't know what that means, but they're becoming more brazen, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think, one of the things that it have been written about, again, by people who know about the sort of reverse engineering programs and that kind of thing, is that the government has been sort of allowing sort of a slow leak until America, they felt like the world could handle it. I mean, you think about Roswell only happened 8 years after the War of the Worlds radio show. So it's not surprising that the government was very concerned about it. And of course, it was the Cold War. It was right after World War II, and there was a lot of fear. But when you look at like the SALT Treaty actually has a mutual notification article about if basically if extraterrestrials are come make the missiles start going off and are seen. Again, I can't remember exactly what the words are, but it's pretty blatant that if there is a reason for missiles that to be turned off or turned on, they will let each other know with Russia, and that actually did happen. Why not Air Force Base in Minnesota had happened in Air Force Base and also in Russia. But But yeah, so it's interesting. One other aspect, just for consideration, is that there's a professor out of Harvard, Dr. Masters, Michael Masters, who's written a book called The Extraterrestrial Theory. And that theory is that these are actually future humans coming back who have mastered time travel. And that's why, there's they can reach us through consciousness, and why they fly their ships with consciousness instead of actually having levers and buttons and things. So
Now
again,
that's
lots of
interesting.
cool, interesting theories out there.
Yeah, that sounds like an excellent science fiction movie, but it may be nonfiction. So, one thing we've
Yeah,
learned from the work
this
we do, you have to be open to everything, and that to me sounds very plausible.
Yeah, I think that's a book you would enjoy, Bob.
I'll have to pick that up. Well, thanks, Deb, for giving us a little education on this. I think that may be the next discipline of research that we're going to be interested in, because I see so many similarities, and who knows? I'll keep my eyes open.
There's a
Maybe.
lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, there's so much overlap. And like you said, I mean, like Jake Barber, who is, come out as a military helicopter guy who actually has retrieved some of these vehicles and just being overcome with love. Yeah, there's so many crossovers.
I
That's why
know.
I really have gotten into it.
So
So yeah. All right, well, thank you for having me on.
let me ask you a question. If you it's pure speculation. So let's assume that there's life on millions of other planets. You know, when you consider that there are billions and billions of planets, I mean, it seems absurd that we would be the only one that has life on it. So assuming that the universe is populated in many planets besides Earth. When those beings physically die, assuming that they do, also assuming that they have bodies, would they go to the same afterlife realm that we here on Earth go
Oh
to?
yeah. Yeah, I have no questions. Yeah, I mean it's a universe. Again, my belief system is that there's a universal energy, love, God, whatever you however you want to call it. And why would we believe that our tiny little planet is the only place where people want to go experience being in some kind of physical form?
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I think we all go to the same place, except that that there may be different dimensions and frequency levels. And people, we always believe that people go to realms of with like-minded people. So, maybe they go to a different realm, but it's still, an afterlife realm. So, yeah, I agree. I don't
Yeah,
think.
Dr. Linda Bachman, I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. I apologize.
Yeah. No, I mean it's fascinating, but I appreciate you offering your knowledge and experiences, and thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, take care. Well, obviously our guest was not able to make it. I hope he's okay. I don't know what happened, but if anybody would like to call in on any subject to discuss a personal experience or something related to the afterlife, feel free to call. The number here is 888-627-6008. And somebody had sent in a question. We've answered it before, just to pivot, wanting to know about our medium certification, program. And I won't get, too deep into it, but we've been doing it since 2005. In those 20 years, we've certified 27 mediums. So if you do the math, that's a little more than, one per year. So it's a very comprehensive, program. Roughly 10 to 15% of the mediums that go through the process actually gain certification. Without getting too deep into the process, mediums are do a series of readings for five different trained sitters meaning the people that are getting the readings, and those sitters are trained in a mediumship and what constitutes specific evidence versus general stuff and what to say and not say during a medium reading and how to score it. And that's a little bit of a difficult part, because there are certain things that are obvious. The medium gives you a statement and it's true. I mean, you would mark that as a hit. And somebody makes a state, the medium makes a statement and you know it not to be true. And that's also obvious. So you mark that as a miss. But there are a lot of things that are in between, that go into the maybe category. Maybe you don't know and you have to ask somebody, to find out. And then certain things should be weighted more heavily than others. I'm sure you would agree. So if a medium was giving me a reading and they could see me and they could see my approximate age, if they said to me that they had my grandmother in spirit, I would have to mark that as a hit because it's true, except that right now she'd be about 120. So it's a, might be the oldest person on earth. So it's a pretty good bet, So even though I marked it as a hit, if I had similar information to that, the medium could conceivably get 100% accuracy, but it's all general, bullshit to use, sorry, to use that language. But you know what I mean, but on the other hand, if the medium said, I have your grandmother Rebecca here and gave me other evidence and, obviously got her exact name, I think you would agree that should be given more weight than just a general statement. Also on the same subject, a lot of mediums that come to us, they're trained or they believe that their job is to give messages. So in their mind, if they give the sitter a message of love, that their job is done and that's going to make you feel better and they, they move on. I always explain that you can't give a message unless you first established to the satisfaction of the sitter that you're actually talking to a deceased loved one. After they've established that evidence and then the sitter is convinced that the communication is taking place, then the messages can come. But to me, if a medium said to me that my deceased wife says that she loves me, I assume that that's true, but it doesn't give me any feeling that that communication is taking place because there's no specific evidence. So I think you get what I mean. That was there was. This particular listener had some other questions about, mediumship, but one question that she also has had was, do people in spirit keep tabs on us? Are they always, part of our lives? And I think the first part is yes, they do keep tabs on us, but I think it's more like when we need them, when they summon us, they're not following us into the bathroom and, things of that nature, but they're aware of things. And, do they have the power to change the course of events? I don't know if they can do that per se, but they can certainly give you, try to nudge you in one direction or not. You've heard stories about people driving to work and they go the same way every day and a thought gets it pops into the head that they should take a different route or make a left turn instead of the right. And then they found out that if they made a right, there was an accident, that occurred. So that could be coming from spirit, and that could be their way of changing the course of events. But I don't think that our loved ones in spirit have the power to do things on a macro level. They can't end wars, and they can't change world opinion and things like that. Maybe it's possible if masses of discarnate entities were on the same wavelength, just like it's possible if people here are on the same wavelength. But for the most part, I think that our loved ones. I think I told the story on the show because I had the same question, whether our loved ones are aware of what we're doing. And after my wife passed, I came back to the house, which was very difficult. And I was washing the dishes that were in the sink, and I remembered that we had done a mass renovation in the house, including the kitchen. And I was always complaining about, the kitchen sink, that it was a double sink, and it was poorly designed, in my opinion, because every time I washed the dishes, the water would splatter up and I'd get all wet because the sinks weren't deep enough. So while I'm washing the dishes, I talked to my deceased wife out loud, and I said, Fran, I don't care what you say, this kitchen is poorly designed. These sinks just don't work. And then the next morning, I got a call from one of the mediums that's certified by us, who was also very friendly with my wife and myself. And she said to me, Bob, I wasn't doing a reading. I was just meditating, my morning meditation. And Fran popped in, and she asked me to call you and mention the words kitchen sink. So, as you might expect, that kind of blew me away, because I was just mentioning that 12 hours before, directed to her, and now she went through a third party to let me know. So things like that happen more often than not. And I'm sure that many of you have similar stories. Sometimes you share it with us, sometimes you don't. If you have a story like that and you want to call, it's 888-627-6008. One of the questions that I wanted to ask the guest that was supposed to be here today is I know he has, in addition to being a brilliant researcher and professor, he had his own personal experiences. He had a near-death experience. He had a Kundalini awakening. He had a UFO experience, and I was going to ask him, if being a scientist, if he felt that it was the science being aware of the evidence that opened him up to receive these things. Because I know in my particular case, I was a typical left brain thinker. Everything had to be proven. All things had a physical explanation. I didn't believe, in the afterlife. As it turns out, after my daughter passed, all sorts of after-death communications were happening around me. But since I didn't believe in them, and it wasn't in my frame of reference, I didn't recognize them. But after I became convinced by the scientific evidence that all this was true, I finally relented. And what I found is that after I came to believe that things would occur, then I started recognizing all these things that were happening around me, some of them, quite incredible. So I think that we can come to this knowing that there's a world beyond physical death two ways. One could be the route that I took by examining the evidence, but probably the more convincing way is to have a profound non-physical personal experience. And that could be a dream visitation, or it could be going out of body, or it could be even obviously a near-death experience, but it could be an extraordinary reading with a medium that just changes the way you think. But not these profound experiences don't come to everybody. And sometimes they come when you least expect it. Or sometimes, they don't come at all. And nobody knows the reason to that. It's the same reason why people ask, well, my friend gets sign after sign after sign, and I don't get any. Why? Did I do something wrong? Is it possible that my loved one doesn't want to communicate with me? Do they not love me? My answer to that is, of course, they do. It's just a resonance that has to take place. And sometimes their loved ones aren't able to match that frequency and get through to you. Sometimes what they can do, though, is that they can get through to somebody else, knowing that that person will get a message through to you. I had an experience, and I'm not intuitive at all. I've had dream visitations, but other than that, I don't consider myself to have any accomplished, psychic ability. I'm pretty, actually, it's quite the opposite. But one day, and I may have told this story on the air once before, but we have close friends of the foundation. I met them through the foundation because they lost their teenage daughter, and I had never been in their home, and I never met their daughter. And one night I have this dream visitation, and it's this girl, Jessie. I knew her name, and don't ask me how I knew, but it's just this inner knowing. There was no doubt I was talking to my friend's daughter, Jessie. And being that I was into this work, I knew, even as the visitation was taking place, to pay close attention, to what I saw, because I knew I would have to repeat that afterwards. So I made a note of how tall Jessie was, and the length of her hair, and the color of her hair, and the color of her eyes. And we were standing in my friend's home, and we were facing a wall of glass and looking out into this expansive backyard. And in the backyard, Jessie told me that she and her father built a pool back there, and then they sort of a natural pool, and they line the pool with the stone boulders. And so I took note of all that, and eventually the dream ended. And of course, then I had a choice. I mean, do I call up? Normally, I would never call up somebody and say that I met your deceased daughter. I mean, I just wouldn't do that, except that my friends were already part of the foundation, so I knew they would be open to it. I also knew that my friend was desperately trying to get a message from her daughter Jessie and wasn't able to. I called her and I said, "Look, I just listen. I Jessie came to me last night, and I said she's, I don't remember the exact details, but I said she was about 5'8", and she had shoulder length brown hair, and she had blue eyes. And I said that you have a wall of glass in your kitchen area." And in the backyard, there's a pool that Jessie built with her father back there, and it's lined with stone boulders. As it turned out, I mean, everything that I said was true. The only thing that I misinterpreted was that it wasn't a pool that they built together. It was a pond, that had it. But other than that, I mean, the thing that was so extraordinary about that is, Jessie, there was no doubt in my mind that Jessie found a conduit in me, because she wasn't able to get through to her mom, and she knew I would get a message to her mom. So I got to feel what a medium feels like when they communicate information, and that felt pretty good. And it also taught me to be aware that, messages come from, unlikely sources. And also that, even though obviously I'm not a medium, but we all have certain abilities, intuitive abilities, whether we realize it or not. In my case, it only came through when I was in a stage of sleep because my mind, which chatters 24, seemingly 24 hours a day, was at rest because I was asleep. So, Jessie probably saw a conduit and knew that she could get through to me. Sometimes it's amazing the circuitry and the maze that goes through when somebody wants to communicate. Because after all, the overriding wish of people in the spirit world, especially soon after they pass, is to let their loved ones here in the physical world know that they still exist. And that's why the information that comes through sometimes seems trivial in nature. The little facts and to others they may seem frivolous. And why even talk about that? Why not talk about the bigger issues? What it's like in the afterlife, and do those try to on the other side try to impart wisdom to us and so forth. But how would we know, how would we be convinced that our loved one is talking to us through specific evidence, stuff that only we would know, that the medium couldn't have researched and so forth. And that's why we don't get these long exposés of descriptions from the other side. We get snippets that they're able to communicate either directly to us or, through the medium. So I think that answers the question on mediumship. The other thing, the other question about mediumship was that they wanted to know if mediums can always communicate with their own deceased loved ones. Most of the mediums have told us that when they want to communicate with one of their deceased loved ones, they go to another medium, because a lot of them say, not all, but a lot of them say that they're not able to connect. I don't know why that is. It could also be that maybe that they don't trust the information because, after all, they're a medium. So, they want an outside source, to verify that. We once did a survey where we asked people one question, would you rather receive communication from your deceased loved one directly, or would you prefer to get it through a medium? And when I devised that question, I was positive that the overwhelming majority would say that they would rather get that information directly. I know I would. And to my surprise, it was the opposite. The majority said that they would rather get the information through a medium. So then I started probing why, because I wasn't sure. And there were two factors. One, the response was that fear came into play. People are fearful of things that they that are non-physical in nature, that are can't be perceived with their own physical senses. So they thought that if they did something, maybe their religion or maybe all their societal cultural influences instilled that fear factor. So that was one reason why they said they'd rather get it through a medium. But the other reason was that if they got it directly, they would worry that somehow they were misinterpreting or making it up, or maybe it was a product of their own grief and it was just their imagination. Whereas if the information came through a so-called professional, somebody that does this, as a profession, then they would trust the information. And then both those explanations made sense to me. And I understood. And I wonder, for those among our listeners, what would you say? Would you rather get a message directly, or or through a medium, or through a third party? I still say that I'd rather get it directly. But the thing that I always remember going back to that fear factor is that many, as you know, we run grief retreats, four of them a year. And one of them, about 10 years ago, there was a woman that was so distraught, and I took her aside and I asked her a question. I said, "What would it take for you to become convinced without doubt, that your daughter still exists in some form?" And she said, "Bob, if I could see my daughter, then I would believe." And I forgot about that. And then, lo and behold, 10 years later, or it wasn't 10 years, maybe it was 8 years later, she came to another retreat, and she came up to me and she said, "Do you remember the conversation that we had 8 years ago?" Honestly, I didn't. I talked to so many people, and I said, "No, please remind me." And she told me what happened, and she said, "And let me tell you, I saw my daughter. She appeared at the foot of my bed." And I said, "Then what happened?" I said, "Did you engage her in conversation?" She said, "No, it scared the crap out of me, and I yelled, and then my daughter disappeared." And I thought to myself, what a shame, that here her daughter went, jump through hoops to figure out how to manifest her energy in physical form, visited her mom, and then, it just must have been totally disillusioned when mom started screaming, and of course she didn't want to scare her mom, so she just disappeared. So it just goes to show that, when people talk about apparitions that appear, they're just visitations. There's nothing to be fearful of. I once told a story about 2 years after my daughter passed. I went to see my family doctor, who also happened to be a friend of mine. I had some ailment. It was about 2 years, after the passing, and I waited 40 minutes to see him, and got in the room, and he asked me how I'm doing, and I said, I'm doing okay." He says, "What have you been up to?" I said, "Well, if you really want to know," I said, "I'm studying survival of consciousness." And he said, "Okay," and he moved on to something else. And then he stopped again. He said, "Can I ask you something?" And I said, "What?" He says, "What's survival of consciousness?" And I explained to him the theory that the mind can access separately from the brain, and the mind is consciousness or energy, and it exists beyond the body. So when the body is gone, the memories and personalities still move on. And he just looked at me, and his nurse happened to walk into the room, and it turns out she was listening to the conversation, and she had recently lost a child to crib death, so she was very interested. And eventually she left the room. Now we're talking about 40 minutes. He never asked me the medical reason that I'm there. But he gets this real serious look on his face, and he closes the door, and he said to me, "Bob, can I tell you something?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "My father died 8 years ago." I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't know that." And he said, "Yeah, and that the morning he died, I had a lot of critically ill patients in the hospital, so I had to call my answering service. And I called the, I had to check up on the patients, and he called the answering service, and the first thing he said was, 'Oh, doctor, your father called.'" And he was stunned, and he said, "My father died at 9 o'clock this morning." And they said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, doctor, I'm so sorry. And we must have gotten the message wrong. He must have said your father-in-law." He said, "My father-in-law has been dead 15 years." He said, so the doctor said, "Well, what time did the call come in?" They said, 9:15. He said, "Read me back the message." And the message was, "Hi, I'm okay. I'm still here." And that obviously had a profound effect on him. But in all those 8 years, he never told anybody. He never told his wife. He never told his children. He never, certainly never told a medical colleague. I was the only person he ever mentioned it to, because after he heard the stuff that I was talking about, he knew I wasn't going to judge him. And I guarantee you, in all the years since, and 20 years since, he's never mentioned it to another soul. And I always think of that because what a shame. We're always encouraging people to share their experiences because once you share and talk about it with others, it becomes more mainstream, and it can change the way we think about death, not to mention, further research and all that. And that's what I would encourage everybody to do. You're not trying to convince anybody, but when you have an experience and you're with your friends or your family, in a very matter of fact way, just talk about what happened. You'd be surprised. People are interested. They may have had similar experiences, but they were afraid to tell you because so many of these people have had such experiences, over the years. And when I say so many people, not only in this country but all over the world, since the dawn of man, I mean, a lot of the founders of today's modern religions came out of the ages of mysticism, and they regularly communed with their ancestors. It was very matter of fact. So there's some, not, in a way, we have to rediscover who we once were and stop rationalizing and reasoning why this stuff can't be true, and just embrace the fact that they are true. Well, I'm sorry that something happened with our guest tonight. We'll rebook him for another show. In any event, I enjoyed speaking with you tonight. We will see you next week for the gathering. So tune in next week, and or email us your questions or call in with your questions. I would like to mention that we also. Registration is now open for our October grief retreat in California. That one will be only for parents who lost children. So if you or somebody that might benefit, direct them to our website. All the information is there. With that, I wish you all a good evening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.